following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this July 30th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Man, we got a lot to get to on the show today. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us here on ESPN 106.7 as football season is officially here. Fall practice begins today for Auburn football. They were supposed to practice this morning. It got moved to this afternoon, and so we did not get a chance to see them, and we will not get a chance to see them because we will be on the air, but we did get a chance to listen to Hugh Freeze this morning, so we'll dive into that today, plus Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 will join us as Georgia begins their fall practice tomorrow. We'll also have Daryl Dapridge, Double D, will be joining us coming up in hour number two. We'll talk to him about what he heard from Hugh Freeze, what he's expecting for fall practice, fall camp, some of those position battle things as well. So a jam-packed show for you today. I mentioned Christian Griffin is in the studio. My man, what's up? How are you, sir? Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. Yeah, you mentioned it. Fall camp is here. That means college football is here. Again, we had high school media days for Auburn High School and Lee Scott Academy yesterday, and so that really kicked off the high school side of things, obviously, with SEC media days a couple weeks in the past. You felt it there, but then you got back into a little bit more of a routine. Today kind of kicked everything off to let you know that football in the South is here, man. We got a whole lot to dive into, some of the big-time quotes that Freeze had, some of the expectations for this fall camp. Also, some updated Heisman odds, as Hugh Freeze mentioned a couple quotes about his quarterback and the confidence. Well, the confidence on the Heisman list seems to be kind of following that as well. And then, man, September 27th, or the weekend of the 27th and the 28th, is going to be a weekend that everybody is going to look forward to. We'll dive into the reasons on why, but if you're a betting favorite, that's the weekend that you throw not only all of your Monopoly money on for all the games, but on the ratings for the best weekend in the entire fall.
Yeah, no doubt. There's a lot going on that weekend, and there's some others around there, too, when the fall comes around. So we'll talk about that a little bit today as well. But the phone lines are open until we get into our pretty heavy guest schedule today. And so if you'd like to be a part of the show, we'd love for you to do so. You could call in by dialing the number 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Did you listen to Hugh Freeze this morning? Did you, what'd you take away from it? Did you like his presence up there? Did you like what he had to say? Did you dislike some of the things that he had to say? We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. You can also, shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And yes, Hugh Freeze opened up this morning with his, press conference. I was there, got a chance to, listen to him, had a chance to ask him a question as well, and overall, I think his charisma, his presence, his attitude was positive and confident. I think you can tell he likes this team on paper. I think you could tell he likes what he got to see from this team back in the spring. And I think you can tell that Hugh Freeze understands the seriousness of this season, but he understands how good this football team could be. That's what I walked away from.
Yeah, it carries over everything you heard at SEC Media Days, right? Of him talking about, man, we've gotten a lot better. We've gotten a lot faster. We've gotten a lot stronger. This team is just better. We talked about the confidence that he had up on the stage, answering the questions and not giving off this arrogance, but giving off a true confidence that was borderline intimidating from the standpoint of, man, how could you have that amount of confidence on stage when you haven't seen that over the past 2 years with the on-field production? But he walked into Atlanta, as did Keldrick Falk, as did Connor Liu, and as did Jackson Arnold, all synced, all together, all very, very confident in what they had moving forward. And the opening presser today, you feel like, is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, so a lot of good questions. I mean, he didn't say a ton in terms of his opening statements, but a lot of good questions. Of course, he was asked about Malcolm Simmons. We'll talk about that in just a moment. He talked about the overall health and attitude of the team going in to this season. I was able to ask him about the secondary, and he went on for a long time about the secondary, so excited to kind of dive into that as well. Mentioned something about the offensive line. He answered a question about transfers, and of course, there was one journalist who, of course, had to ask a secondary question about Malcolm Simmons after it was already addressed, trying to get him to say something, and he didn't, so shout out to Hugh Freeze for holding his own there. Talking about incoming freshmen, and had a really good answer there about last year having to play a bunch of freshmen and hoping that you don't have to do quite that much this year, but they are confident in the freshmen that are going to be there. He confirmed that there will be a quarterback battle for QB2, and then just this day and age of the transfer portal and the confidence of this quarterback room and things like that. And so, again, overall, I think he said some interesting things. And, again, I just walk away from the presser this morning feeling pretty good about what this Auburn team is going to do. Of course, he can only answer so much because they're just now starting practice. Yeah. But there's a lot of dudes on this team. I mean, he probably listed during his, 20-minute presser or whatever that it was. I mean, he probably listed 40 or 50 names in different positions and different impact players and ones returning from a year ago, freshmen coming in, and transfer portal guys.
That's the one. I mean, it's the guys that we've talked about for so long. So many of these young guys that had to play such meaningful snaps this past year when they were freshmen. Now you're still sophomores, but you feel like you have that upperclassman experience. You then bring on those guys that are the juniors and the seniors that can lead the way, and guys like Caleb Wheatland, who you expect to take a big jump in the leadership role for this young linebacker room, things like that. I mean, you feel like there's a whole lot of confidence, and how could you not be so excited? And I know that word gets thrown around like it's nothing for fall camp and these coaches of, man, we're excited right to hit the field, man. I'm so excited for this group. We got a lot of dudes. But, man, when you look at the roster on paper, it's what we've been diving through over the past couple of days, talking about the question marks as you work your way into fall camp of how could you not be excited? We've talked about the blue chip ratio for this Auburn Tiger team this year and how it's above 63%. I mean, it is a loaded room, and you have more talent on the team, and you'll see on the field 1 through 11 than you've seen in quite a long time.
So we started in terms of questions today for Hugh Freeze. He was asked about Malcolm Simmons, and he says, quote, based on the information that I've been given from our campus administration, who have knowledge of the matter, he has been clear to participate in team activities. That's all he said. And again, when someone tried to bait him the second time, he answered it the exact same way, because that's what's going on here. This is not an Auburn football issue. This is not something that Hugh Freeze has any control over with Malcolm Simmons. This is the university and this is law enforcement. And I don't know if you saw this today. Malcolm's preliminary hearing got moved from August 13th up to August 8th. His lawyer was asking for that. That got moved up. And so that is now going to take place on August 8th. A lot of the charges were dropped against Malcolm Simmons, which is why he was granted eligibility, basically, to be able to be a part of the football team. So I think it is safe to say, at least for now, until that hearing, we are able to talk about Malcolm Simmons as a part of this football team, as a part of this wide receiver room, since he is going to be jerseyed up, he's going to be practicing, he's going to have a helmet on and out there on the sidelines and out there on the field. And so I think it's safe for us to talk about him in that scenario or situation until we're given further information. I also said that I was able to ask him about the secondary. I said, you know, you look at this team on paper in terms of your corners, your safeties, and your nickels, and top to bottom, there's just talent all over the field. I said, what are you and DJ Durkin looking for, and in terms of just how you determine who your starters will be, who your backups will be, and who's going to be on and off the field. And look, he really went in on the idea that they've got depth back there, and he didn't really talk about any one person in particular. He says that Champ Anthony was a little banged up, and he's good to go. He said he might be limited a little bit, but that they are going to be fine. He did mention that Jay Crawford and Kayan Lee had really good years last year, which they did, but you have to find some other dudes on the outside. You have to find some other guys that can play that corner spot. And, I mean, he mentioned, I mean, just trying to count here, I mean, 6, 7, 8 different players in this answer that he gave me just about the depth and the options that they're going to have in the secondary this year.
Yeah, and he talked about a couple freshmen, named a couple of them as well, said that Eric Winters and Anquan Fagans are both expected to play big-time snaps, and it's something that you haven't seen with the position group, especially for Auburn on the defensive side of the football, that secondary, right? You've had your two guys. You might have that third if needed, but you feel very limited in what you're able to run, right? But now you have so many guys where you can run 4-3s, you can run nickels, you can run dimes, and you can run any sort of man. You can put guys on islands if you need to. You can mix and match so many different things. And on the defensive side of the football, again, with Durkin being able to talk to whoever the captain that they choose is up until that 15-second mark in the play call, I mean, you can mix and match so many different looks and formations because there's so much talent. The offense on the other side of the football can't sit there and pinpoint where they want to go.
And he talked about the safety room being a ton deeper than it was last year. I like that he brought up Rayshon Pleasant and Rayon Strader, guys who have joined this team this year, guys that are coming from several legitimate snaps at other places and are going to step in. Free said that they can play multiple spots in the back end. And so he says, I'm excited about the fact that we have some options there. And just talking about the secondary as a whole, which tells me, Christian, there's really no excuse for the secondary not to be good. Across the corners, the safeties, the nickels, over the middle, on the edge, doesn't really matter. Now, you got to dive a little bit deeper into this, and you have to say, okay, well, what do you consider good? Well, I consider good not being beat on several deep balls. I consider being good keeping things in front of you, not committing penalties, not committing PIs, not committing holdings, right? Being able to come up and make a tackle in space if somebody breaks one off or comes out on the edge and gets blocked, right? Can you come over and make the right play? Can you make the right decision? Can you make the right read? All of those things go into playing really good secondary ball, and that's what I'm going to be looking for this fall and early on in the season. But again, there's so many guys in there, you feel like it's impossible not to have really good players on the field at any given time.
And you know what helps your DBs and your safeties is having a great pass rush. Having Keldrick Falk on the edge, having Malik Autry up front, or having some of these guys that can plug holes and get to the quarterback, stuff the run, get you into obvious passing downs where the safeties don't have to feel like they need to sit and try and read a play action pass. If it's 3rd and 12, obviously you're not running a play action. Being able to get behind the chains, work with the pass rush, speed up the quarterback all of those things help so much. And so, yes, as good as these DBs are supposed to be, man, the best way to help them out is give that quarterback who thinks he has that 2.5-3 second internal clock, speed it up a little bit, force the throws, force errant throws, force under throws, and allow these DBs to do what they do best and go ball hunting.
And to go on the other side of that, Freeze was asked about the offensive line, and this answer really stood out to me. He says, quote, "I think we're in the best position there. Got an NFL grade back from the first guy that's been here." Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. Freeze says this. He has all five of those guys draftable. Right now, the five projected starters on Auburn's offensive line, and the first time they were scouted by an NFL scout, he said that they are all NFL-type of players up there in terms of the projected starters. And that includes Tutal Miller, which this was a good note to get, implying that Tutal's not going to start at that tackle spot, which is fine. I don't think he was going to anyway. But he said that Tutal also got graded out as draftable into the NFL.
And draftable is already complimentative enough, just being able to hear your name called. But, man, we were doing these early draft mocks and seeing how high Keldrick Falk was going to go. And, you know, he was the top 10 pick and the first non-quarterback in certain mocks. But you were seeing Xavier Chaplin. You were seeing Mason Murphy in the first and second rounds. And so being able to build that sort of pipeline, right? I mean, how long has it been since you've had a legitimate Auburn Tiger play meaningful snaps on the offensive line in the NFL? If you can sort of build that pipeline into, man, look at what these transfers were able to do. Look at what these young kids were able to develop and work their skill sets into the NFL. That is huge for future recruiting.
I mean, it's huge just for everything. The fact that Auburn, I mean, the offensive line has just been pitiful. It's been pitiful, really. And so I thought that was remarkable to hear. The fact that sounds like they're already pretty set on their offensive line on the starting five. Sounds like that they're all going to be impactful. They're all going to be good. And he said it. We have high expectations for them. They're supposed to protect the passer. They're supposed to help us run the football. They have to be good if Auburn wants to be good in 2025. It's simple as that.
It's a weird thought, but it's your job. It's what you quite literally get paid to do. So there should be a high expectation. There should be a high ceiling for the offensive running success and working in play action and just the overall line of scrimmage success. I am interested to see, again, we won't be able to attend practice because it got moved from this morning to this afternoon when we will be on the air, but talking about the running back rooms, right? With Jeremiah Cobb, got a little banged up, said that he fractured his finger. He'll be in a yellow jersey, basically non-contact all this week. We didn't see Darrell Robinson at all in the fall just because of a couple injuries as well. Said that both are progressing, but does that worry you at all just from the standpoint of, man, now you don't have that 2 and 3 that we've talked about all season long, obviously, and thankfully you have enough talent behind them if needed, but you feel like you could see a bigger role for Damari Alston, at least in these first couple of weeks, depending on how all of those progressions and healthiness go?
Yeah, I think that would be the idea, is that Damari Alston would get, obviously, the majority of the carries in fall, and then the first couple of games of the year, you would see DA absolutely be RB1. But good news is Jeremiah Cobb and Darrell Robinson are not freshmen. They're not brand new. This isn't their first time being here. They know what it takes to play running back at D1 SEC level or just Power 4 level, right? Darrell Robinson, I know he's coming from UConn, but I promise the dude's a stud, okay? He looks the part. I saw a video of him yesterday, and yeah, there's no bowling ball size about him. He is slim and monstrous, okay? And so that's the good thing, is that while Darrell and Jeremiah Cobb will probably be limited in fall, I don't worry about them being in shape or having the football mind or the IQ or being in the mindset of what they need to do, because you'll still be able to be around the team and do certain reps. You just won't be going straight up 11 on 11. So I think you'll see, of course, DA get most of those carries. He'll probably, with that being said, will probably be your starter in Baylor. But then you have two games after that to truly figure it out. And even those first couple of road games after that in the SEC, you get to use them on a rotation. Jeremiah Cobb's just a dislocated finger, right? I mean, he'll be fine. And I think Darrell Robinson will be fine too.
I don't think that's the biggest problem. I mean, hey, Auburn has girth and length, baby, and that's what you need to
compete in the SEC. Length matters, right? That's what Hugh Freeze said today, and people, of course, took that and and ran with it. So we'll take a break. We'll come back, keep talking about what Hugh Freeze had to say, kind of the other things that he broke down in his opening presser, plus what we're looking forward to in fall practice beginning this afternoon. And then Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 will be with us at 2:30. All that coming up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 as we're talking opening day for Auburn football fall practice. They begin coming up in about an hour or so. And Hugh Freeze opened up with his press conference this morning, had a lot of good things to say. We were just kind of diving through and kind of deciphering kind of everything that he talked about. And one of the things that I mentioned earlier that I really liked about what Freeze said in terms of the incoming freshman, he talked a lot about this, where he mentioned the receivers or the guys on the defensive line or the guys in the secondary, kind of bouncing off of what I had said or what I had asked him a little bit earlier, just about the idea that you're going to have dudes who you can play who are young, but I feel like you don't have to rely on them as much this year, mainly because all the freshmen that played last year are sophomores this year. I mean, that's the big thing for me is, I mean, there was a time Auburn was playing more freshmen than almost anybody in the SEC or anybody in college football, especially on the defensive side.
There was a percentage, on the defensive side of the football that Auburn led the SEC or led the, it was either the SEC or the country in snaps by freshmen at some certain point in the season.
Yeah. And the word he continued to use today was depth. They have depth everywhere. They have dudes everywhere. They have somebody or multiple somebodies at just about every single position on this team. And that's what, think about it. That's what Auburn has been lacking for nearly a decade is, okay, we have these good couple of linebackers, but if one of them goes down, well, you're in trouble. Well, we got some pretty good corners out there, but we don't really know what's going to go on if they don't pan out or if they're getting burned or if they just check out, right? Well, we're all right on the defensive line, but yeah, that dude rolled his ankle, so now we're putting this guy out there for his first career start. Like, you don't really have that issue anymore. You have a bunch of dudes. And Auburn has finally gotten to that point, thankfully, from Hugh Freeze's recruiting efforts, yes. But you've also been able to keep a bunch of dudes on this team and bring in others as well, while all of them buying into the idea that let's win this thing together rather than going somewhere and just playing solo ball.
Yeah, I mean, there's two R's in the world of college football that are equivalently as important, and that's recruiting and retaining. You feel like both of those, you can almost throw them one as the same in some situations because you're having to recruit your retaining players just to have them on the team next year. But that's one of the biggest things that we talked about, whether that was in the spring transfer portal, even in the winter portal of, man, you might not see Auburn make these crazy jumps. They got a bunch of their guys in the winter, but you didn't see many guys leave in the spring. You didn't see Auburn go out and get those top name players because you didn't feel like they needed to, because they were able to keep so many of the players that they had from 2 years ago and this past year. And yeah, you're hearing a whole lot about the buy-in and everybody's working on the same side. Everybody's pulling in that same direction and hearing things like that. Again, I know that the word excitement gets thrown around so easily in these press conferences of, man, I'm so excited to see this team go out and compete. But it kind of just, again, is relaying everything that you've heard from Atlanta up until now of, man, Coach Freeze does genuinely seem like his quotes are true when he's saying he can't remember a time when he's been more excited for a fall camp just simply because of what he has on his team.
Are you buying into much of what he said about the confidence in quarterbacks this morning? His comment about that. I've seen people have mixed reactions to this. And what he said was, somebody asked him about just instilling confidence in the quarterbacks, and particularly in Jackson Arnold being the starter. And he says, I used to just go tempo, 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 and I was proud if we had 95 plays a game and scored a bunch of points, yada, yada, yada. That's the way he started. And then you start kind of finding out, maybe if I would have managed the clock a little different, we would have won another game or two. I've changed that somewhat. I also used to be very adamant on the number one priority of practice is for our quarterback to leave the field confident. That's where they're at right now. He says, I'm going back to that this year. I'm going back to the number one priority of our practice is for the quarterback to leave the field confident. And that involves DJ Durkin and whether he has had conversations with DJ Durkin and the defense to, for lack of a better way to say it, take it easy on the quarterbacks at times. How do you feel about what he had to say there?
People are going to go and run with that quote from the standpoint of, oh, I'm so glad that Jackson Arnold is confident and happy, and I'm glad that Freeze hasn't tested him and things like that. But I honestly don't have a problem with it. Everybody does it. Everybody wants to make sure that when your quarterback and one of your captains is going to be leading your team, that it's not out of false confidence. It's with the ability to, man, go out and have the belief that you can go out and compete. You can go out and win so much of sports, and everybody knows this. I played college baseball, and obviously confidence is one of the biggest things in baseball and in all of sports. Of, man, if your brain feels like you can do something, you're going to be able to go out and do it so much better than if you have that hesitancy in the back of your mind. And I know that so many people, yes, are going to take that quote as of, or as a couple of the other quotes, and turn them into anything in a negative light towards Auburn or towards Jackson Arnold. But no, I don't disagree with it whatsoever. I like it personally. I like the fact that he has confidence, and he has the quotes of saying he's in a great spot right now of understanding our play calling, because, well, over the past couple of years, that's been the biggest concern, right? You walk off the field, the quarterback and the head coach were seeing different things. They're not on that same light. If it takes a little bit of confidence for Arnold and Freeze to be able to get on that right page to where you can complete third down and eights and do exactly what you're supposed to do, then I'm all for it.
More on this as we go. We'll take a break. Come back with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Auburn starts today. Georgia starts tomorrow. We'll get his thoughts on the biggest headlines, news stories, position battles, and more. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joins us next.
Your 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
We've got 30 minutes, or we're 30 minutes into hour number one. There you go. Close, but no cigar. 30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We appreciate you being with us. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. And we take a sidestep from Auburn football as fall practice begins today for the Tigers. And we talk a little bit of Georgia football as the Dogs get going tomorrow over in Athens. And we bring in our man, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. It's good to talk to you, my friend. And look, football season is finally here.
Hard to believe it. I appreciate you guys having me on. And, yeah, we're, what, less than a month from that Auburn game against Baylor. I saw some stuff on social media today with that week one Saturday with all the TV times and all the kickoffs. Football's inside, and I'm super excited to be on and talk about what Georgia's got going on.
Jordan, before we dive into fall camp, I'm sure you saw all of the votes from SEC Media Days, and it was Texas predicted to beat Georgia in the SEC Championship. Does that surprise you at all, good or bad, with Georgia making it? And what's been kind of the vibe around that final voting over in Athens?
Yeah, the thing that really surprised me, I sort of went into that vote thinking that the majority of voters would not have Georgia in the SEC title game. I was sort of watching Texas-Alabama, thought there was maybe a chance LSU could get in there. But, you know, the reason I thought that was that I thought there would be a lot of questions, maybe some hesitation about Gunnar Stockton from the voters. But Georgia voted to finish second in the SEC. I have them winning the SEC, and a lot of that is because of what they have around Gunnar Stockton, and I think what they have on defense. So Yeah, I was a little surprised just because I really thought the voters might be a little more bearish on Gunnar Stockton and not think that, you know, he would be good enough to get Georgia there. But I'm sure that Georgia fans were pretty happy with that, but hoping that Georgia finishes one spot higher than they were voted in Atlanta.
Well, there's a lot of confidence in this Georgia team, but there are some questions on this Georgia team, too. And so with fall practice beginning tomorrow, Jordan, will you guys have a chance to speak with Kirby before or after practice tomorrow to get the season started?
Yeah, we're going to talk to Kirby at about 10:30 Central Time on Thursday. And then probably 4 hours after that, we're going to get to go out and watch practice for, I imagine, 15, 20 minutes. So not sure how much we will get, but, you know, as far as practice. But we'll get to talk to Kirby beforehand and probably talk to about four players as well before they go out to practice.
And I'm sure I know the answer to this, but do you expect Kirby to say anything noteworthy or any updates or injury updates or any sort of thing that can get some people excited? Any expectations on what Kirby says tomorrow?
Yeah, the first day of fall camp, I don't anticipate him saying very much. Maybe a few injury updates. I'm not expecting anything out of this world on that regard. Maybe some people that just have, you know, hamstring pulls, injuries like that, nothing serious. And, you know, usually that first day, it's sort of looking ahead to the month ahead. I know that these guys are excited to be back to work. And, you know, Kirby will get, I'm sure, some quarterback questions. I really would be surprised if he goes into detail. He wants that competition ongoing. Although, you know, saying that, I feel very comfortable it will be Gunnar Stockton by the time we are in game week in about a month when they're getting ready to play Marshall.
Who is one of the biggest transfer names? Georgia added 10 of them in the offseason, and one of the biggest ones that I highlighted all offseason long was Elo Madozi. You feel like the Army outside linebacker is going to be a heavily contributor for the defensive side of the football for Georgia. Is it his name, or is it another big-time name like Zachariah Branch that you're going to be paying a whole lot of attention to here early on in the fall?
Elo's a really good pick, and a big part of that was he transferred after the spring. So the thing that kind of helps us when it comes to looking at some of the transfers, the majority of those guys were around for spring practice. So we got to watch them during the spring, got to see the majority of them during G-Day, but they've added a few transfers since then. Elo Madozi is the most obvious one, outside linebacker from Army. He's being counted on, you know, I believe, to start, and, you know, he's going to be tested over these next few weeks to see if he's up for that challenge. But him, Josh McCray, a running back that they got from Illinois, I think he's going to play quite a bit. I'll shout out Enterprise, Alabama. He went to Enterprise before going to Illinois, so watching how he fits in and what's a really loaded backfield. They got, I would say, at least seven guys that could legitimately get, you know, considerable playing time this year, so see how Josh McCray fits in there. And other transfer after the spring, Josh Horton, a guy they got from Miami, as well as a center, Walt Clair Flynn, that they got from UCF. He's a Grayson alum. So some interest there when it comes to guys we have never seen in a Georgia jersey before. Elo is definitely the guy leading that group, but I'll be interested to watch all of those guys and see how they fit in.
You mentioned a couple of the running backs. I mean, Roderick Robinson's in there, Nate Frazier as well. A guy, Cass Jones, is somebody that not too many people know the name of before they played Georgia, but you feel like is that ultimate utility guy. You can put him anywhere on the football field, and he finds a way to get the ball in his hands, very explosive, and more times than not finds the end zone. What do you expect his role to look like early on just with that running back room that has so many pieces?
It's really fascinating, and it's a big question for me that we really won't get an answer to until the season starts. Cass Jones was a guy that, an interesting story at Georgia, a former walk-on, a guy that has stuck it out and, you know, last year played a really important role. Big third down back, made some big plays over the course of the season. I believe it was the Georgia Tech game. He had a really crucial overtime touchdown as that game went back and forth. So to see how Cash fits in is really interesting because to me, I look at Nate Frazier as your lead back. He was the leading rusher last year. Josh McCray, who I just mentioned, the Illinois transfer, I think that he's probably your second back. And, you know, maybe they use Cash a lot on third downs, but he's going to have to fight and prove himself in this room because it is very deep with guys like Roderick Robinson, who you mentioned, Chauncey Bowen, who is a redshirt freshman, Bo Walker, one of the guys we talked about the most during spring practice, a true freshman. I really don't envy Josh Crawford, the running backs coach, or really this whole staff when it comes to divvying up these snaps, because they have got a whole lot of options, but only one of them is going to get the ball at a time. So to see how they get out there and how they use those guys is going to be really interesting.
We're talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And we've kind of gotten down this road a little bit, but fall is all about position battles, right? There are some guys who are solidified starters coming back for Georgia, but then there are several positions that are up in the air. With what we've just talked about and some that we haven't, can you give us an idea of, if you had to maybe rank the position battles, maybe 1 through 3 or 5 or something like that, which ones that you're going to be looking out for over the next few weeks?
The top one will definitely be strong safety, which is the safety spot opposite of KJ Bolden. And there's probably three guys that I'm really watching there. Ja'Cory Thomas, who's a guy that we don't see a lot of guys like Ja'Cory Thomas these days, a senior who has spent his entire career at Georgia, and he's bided his time and he's waited his turn. I'd say he goes into fall camp leading the race at that position, but he's going to have a good month to be the starter by the time we get to that Marshall game. The other guys to watch there, Adrian Maddox, a transfer from UAB, had a really impressive 2024 with UAB, so he's done a good job since he got here this winter. And then also Zion Branch, Zachariah Branch's brother, just absolutely stands out physically, a big safety, a guy who's not afraid to hit. I think he's going to play meaningful snaps once we get into the season. Just kind of remains to be seen if he winds up starting. A couple of other position battles I would point to. I would say right guard. They are working with the offensive line that's only going to have one starter from last year back. I think they feel pretty good about who is leading the way at those other positions, but you're going to have a battle at right guard with Daniel Calhoun, who's a redshirt freshman. I'd say he's leading the race going into camp. Juan Gaston, who is a true freshman, who really, really impressed during the spring. And then Michael Ooney, a guy that's a sophomore, I believe a redshirt sophomore at this point, who will be in the mix as well. And then I'd throw a quarterback in there, although I think it's a good position for Gunnar Stockton. I think he will be your starter, but Georgia is not going to say that it's Gunnar's job. They're going to let Ryan Puglisi push him and try to show what he's capable of doing. I think Gunnar's going to lead that charge. But Ryan Puglisi has made folks excited around Georgia. Got a big arm, I think has a ton of potential, but just doesn't have nearly the experience Gunnar Stockton has in this offense. He's going to try to make things interesting, but I think Gunnar Stockton will have this job by the time we get to game week.
Jordan, we've talked a whole lot about the youth of this Georgia football team. I believe it's 54% of the roster is first and second year guys. I'm sitting here looking at the Georgia football schedule. You host Marshall, which you mentioned, to start the year at home, then Austin Peay, then you go to Knoxville in week 3, and then you have a very big bye week in between that Tennessee game and the Alabama game, which is back at home. If there's one thing, and this might be throwing you on the spot because one answer might not be the one that you can absolutely give, but if there is one answer that you're looking to have solved for this team by the time that bye week hits, what would it be?
I think the biggest thing is just the offensive line protecting, because I think that there was a lot of parts of last year's offense that I think you could categorize as a disappointment. The receiver room, which led the nation in drops, Carson Beck, who was very hit or miss and definitely more so than everybody expected, the run game that wound up finishing second to last in the SEC in rushing yards per game. But I think the offensive line was right up there with one of the more disappointing groups, because it was a group that came in with a lot of experience, a lot of expectations. And three of those guys wind up being drafted and a fourth getting an opportunity as an undrafted free agent. So they just really struggled in protection. I think they gave up nearly double the amount of sacks in 2024 that they did in 2023. Again, you could credit some of that to the difficulty of the schedule and having to play in Tuscaloosa and having to play in Austin, having to play in Oxford. But you had that. You had their struggles in run blocking and the run game just being so hit or miss for the better part of the year. If I see really, once they've played that game at Tennessee, because it's hard to kind of gauge where they are playing Marshall and Austin Peay in the first 2 weeks, If they show that they can handle being on the road, playing in a raucous road environment and protect Gunner, I think Gunner's got enough playmakers around him that he can take advantage, that he can lean on those guys and let those guys make plays. If they keep Gunner upright for four quarters in that game in Knoxville, I think that bodes really well, not only for this offense, but for the entire team. We're really looking at the rest of the season.
It just seems like to me, Jordan, before we let you go, it seems like there are conflicting opinions on how difficult this Georgia schedule is. You guys put an article out on Dogs247 today about where ESPN ranked Georgia's football schedule in terms of difficulty. CBS Sports has ranked it. I mean, it just seems to be all over the place. And I think our conversations have been, this is one of the more tougher Georgia schedules we've seen, because like you mentioned, two Knoxville, two Auburn, you still have to play Georgia Tech at the end of the year. Alabama's at home, Ole Miss, Florida, Texas. I mean, there's tough games, but most of them are at home. Where do you kind of stand on what the difficultiness of the schedule is and then how that impacts the expectations for the season?
I think what is hard to kind of compare it to is, you know, I think you get caught up comparing it to last year, which I think was significantly tougher. One, because of the road games at Alabama, at Texas, at Ole Miss. But also the thing that I think is a part of the reason why, when you look at some of these, you know, schedule difficulty rankings, Georgia's sort of on the lower end, is they don't really have a marquee non-conference game besides that Georgia Tech game that they play every year. You know, Georgia opened last season with Clemson. And, you know, other than Tech, we're talking about Marshall, Austin Peay, and Charlotte, an FCS team, and then two FBS teams that I would be very surprised if they wind up going bowling this year. So I think that's a piece of it. And I think what happens, too, with a lot of these rankings, you're comparing it to the rest of the SEC. You know, if you look at nationwide, this schedule, Georgia's probably still, you know, top 20, top 25, maybe top 30.
Sure.
But the thing that helps some of the other SEC teams, as far as if you want to rank them higher, those teams play Georgia, and obviously Georgia does not play itself. So I think that's a piece of it. I think it is a difficult schedule, but I think Georgia is grateful that it has this schedule after what it played last year. And there were multiple times Kirby was asked about those road games in 24, and he would always make sure and say, I'm so glad that we're, you know, flipping, alternating the home and away from 24 to 25. But because basically he was saying, you know, we had to go on the road. Now it's time these teams come to Sanford Stadium. These teams, you know, we should get a little payback because of how difficult this road slate was. And it really was very difficult, but they managed to get through it and still win the SEC. And we'll see this year if they're able to take advantage of some of these top teams, some of these teams that I think are very much playoff contenders, if they can handle business when those teams come play between the hedges.
Georgia starts fall practice tomorrow in Athens. They're going to try and make it to a college football playoff, try to get another national title under the belt of Kirby Smart there in Athens. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He's with us every Wednesday, 2:30, right here on ESPN 106.7. My man, you cover the Dogs better than anybody, and we appreciate you hopping on each and every week and talking with us. Tell people how they can find you if they need and want more coverage on the Georgia Bulldogs.
Definitely, dogs247.com. I would tell folks, keep an eye out on Thursday. I believe we will be running a sale with the start of fall camp, and I can't encourage you guys enough to sign up on board and follow along the coverage from myself, Ben Wolt, Kip Adams, getting ready for a busy fall. You can also follow along at Jordan Davis Hill on Twitter, at dogs247 as well. Going to be a busy next month because football is right around the corner. But super excited about it, and I hope the folks out there who are Georgia fans will follow along. I think it'll be a fun next few weeks.
Man, we always appreciate the time. Stay cool out there tomorrow watching Georgia practice, and we'll get you on for some updates next week.
All right, sounds like a plan.
That's Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Check it out. Again, dogs247.com. If you're a part of the Auburn 247 subscription service, you can get the Dogs247 part as well. We'll take our final break in hour number one. Come back and wrap it up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Come on. Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. We appreciate Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Again, he joins us every Wednesday at 2:30. We appreciate him doing that. Also, just giving us all pretty much the insight on what's going to be taking place and what the storylines will be for Georgia football, who starts fall practice tomorrow. And so, where do you fall on this Georgia schedule? Is it tough or is it not tough? Is it difficult or not difficult? I think the way I described it is pretty good, where there are tough teams on it, but most of the tough games are at home. Compared to last year, which was a difficult schedule, which Jordan mentioned, which I totally agree with, this year's schedule is easier than last year's for Georgia because, again, all their tough games other than Tennessee and Auburn are at home.
Yeah, you have Tennessee on the road, you have Auburn on the road, and Mississippi State on the road. And then you go to Georgia Tech, which is will be more full of Georgia fans than it will
right.
Georgia Tech fans. So you essentially have those three true road games, and then you have the neutral sites in Jacksonville with the Georgia-Florida game. But you feel like you can make the argument either way. I still think it's a difficult schedule like what you're going to, much more difficult than what Georgia of the SEC East is used to seeing. But I do think in comparison to last year, I think you would happily take this side of things. It'll be very interesting to see what their schedule looks like over the next two or three years, just because of right now, it's the you essentially just flipped your home in a ways, but you kept essentially the same SEC schedule. How many of those will stay the same? Or with the OU coming in, how different will it look? So I mean, but this year, I think it's definitely on the easier side of your if you're going to compare to last year.
When you look at the bigger games, though, like Alabama, Ole Miss, I guess just the bigger games in general. Tennessee, Alabama, Auburn, Ole Miss, Florida, and Texas. Florida being neutral site, so throw that one out. How much when the two teams are really good? So for now, let's just say when they host Alabama and they host Texas. When the two teams are just that good, how much of an advantage is playing at home versus playing on the road? Other than the obvious, but when you're talking about two great teams, the atmosphere can impact it, yes. But at the end of the day, it's two great teams playing the same four-quarter ball. Does it matter as much as we think it does in those big, big games?
Yes and no. Yes, from the standpoint of, yeah, the crowd makes it that much more difficult on third down. It makes it that much more difficult just to hear yourself think. Yet Georgia's been so good historically over the past decade or so of being able to go into those environments and play calm, cool, collected. You're looking at what could happen now with Alabama and DeBoer doing that with Sarkisian and Texas doing that. I think Sanford Stadium will play, though, a very, very big factor just because especially the Alabama game, a night game, something Sanford Stadium hasn't seen in quite a long time. I think it will play a very big impact.
We shall see. Georgia starts fall practice tomorrow, but Auburn started today. We'll talk more about that coming up in hour number two. Stick around.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We get underway in the second hour. If you missed any of the first hour, you can go back, catch it with the podcast. We had a lot of fun in that hour. We talked all sorts of stuff. Hugh Freeze opened up fall practice today with a press conference this morning. We kind of dove into that a little bit. Didn't play any of it, but kind of broke it all down, some of the questions that were asked, some of the answers that he gave, and kind of diving a little bit deeper into all of that. And so we'll talk some more of that here in hour two. But we talked about that in the first hour. Plus, we spoke with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 as Georgia gets started tomorrow for fall practice. And so, it was a good hour. It flew by, and we're going to have a lot of fun here in hour number two. But if you missed any of our first hour, you can go back and catch up with the podcast in the podcast center on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, man, y'all know what day it is. It's Wednesday, which means it's Double D Wednesday. Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn will be joining us here in just a little bit. A little bit of a shortened segment, as you know, to kick off hour number two, just so that way we can have the full 30 minutes. We're going to dive into fall camp talk, some of the quotes that he was able to get, some things that he's excited for, some things that he's looking forward to seeing, and some of the biggest question marks that he hopes that can be answered by the time Auburn makes the plane flight out to Waco, Texas, and plays the Baylor Bears on a Friday night. Also going to talk to him a little bit in basketball terms, as well as, again, something we'll dive into for just a moment here on the updated bracketology from Joe Lunardi. We meant to get to it yesterday, but we'll be able to talk a little bit about it here before we talk with Daryl, just about, man, a new number one overall projected seed. Where does Auburn rack up? Where does a couple of these other SEC schools that may have dropped, may have risen just a little bit? We'll talk all about that here in hour number two. And as you mentioned, he is Jacob Goins. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. If you're just now tuning in to start hour number two, or you've been with us for the entire ride, we appreciate everybody for being here with us on ESPN 106.7. And we'll dive back into some more of the Hugh Freeze quotes with fall practice with Daryl, as I mentioned, here in just a little bit. But not too big of a news on the college basketball side of things, because right now you are in that off season. Joe Lunardi's not pumping out brackets left and right trying to see if it's going to be completely accurate, but every month or so you feel like he does more and more research and kind of moves some of those teams around based off where he projects them to be right now. The epitome of college basketball talking season, right? You feel like that is where you're at right now. But Jacob, the Florida Gators are no longer the top overall seed. That has been overrun by the Houston Cougars.
Yeah, and I feel that that's okay. I think that Houston team coming up just a hair short a year ago, you can make the argument they should have won it a year ago. They're going to be really, really good, is that Houston team. And so I'm fine with that. I think them in Florida is legitimately 1A, 1B. I would put Purdue clearly as the two behind them. And then I'm not willing to jump on Duke as a one seed yet, just because, again, it's so many freshmen that they're going to be playing on that squad. John Shire's a great coach, and he's proven that since taking over from Coach K, but I'm not willing to bet on the Duke Blue Devils just yet. But I do think those three teams of Houston, Florida, Purdue, and any sort of combination you want to put them out there, I think they're right now, in late July, early August, before we're still, 3-4 months away from the season starting, those three teams in my book are clearly above all the rest.
Yeah, and those are the number one seeds right now. Again, Houston being the number one overall seed according to the updated bracketology from Joe Lunardi. Florida is the one seed in Washington, D.C. Houston, again, the number one seed in Chicago. Duke is the number one overall seed in the West. Not the number one overall, but the number one seed in the West, in the San Jose regional, and then Purdue in the South. And we mentioned that there wasn't too much movement, and especially on the Auburn side, they haven't moved. They're still projected to be that number four seed in the South in the Houston bracket with Purdue out of St. Louis. As of right now, looking at it, they would play High Point in the winner of Louisville and Liberty. But the biggest thing that we want to talk about is, you've heard so much talk in comparison of, man, is there any way that the Southeastern Conference can live up to the dominance that it had last year, right? And you feel like the answer is no, just simply because of, you saw something in college basketball throughout the entire conference that you have never seen in the world of college basketball. But you scroll down and you're looking at the conference breakdown. The Big East has three teams. The ACC has six. The Big 12 have eight. The Big 10 have 11. And there is the SEC with 14 teams still projected to be in the tournament. And right now it is still the 68-team field, as there has not been that true agreement yet. There are three teams that are in the last four by and last four in, with Ole Miss and Georgia, the last four byes, Texas A&M, one of the last four in. And so I feel like the general expectation, and I feel like it's something we've talked about with this as well, of you're not going to see the pure dominance where there's four teams competing for the number one overall seed or one seeds in general. Yet the conference as a whole is still going to be just as good. And you feel like bracketology is saying the exact same thing, because you're seeing five seeds all the way up to nine seeds. And there's so many teams from the SEC comparable to the Big 12 in football for this upcoming year as the SEC in basketball next year.
I just, until I see it, I'm not ready to go out on that limb and say that the SEC gets 14 teams into the NCAA tournament. Could it happen? Sure. Absolutely, I guess. But until I see it and get this season underway for college basketball, I'm just not ready to go out on that limb just yet, especially with three of those 14 being bubble teams, a lot more of those being Vanderbilt as a 10 seed, right, which is low for a Power 5 school in basketball. Of course, Power 5, I include the Big East in that. You're also looking at Mississippi State as an 8 seed. You're talking some lower teams. Ole Miss is a 10 seed in this scenario. Georgia's a 10 seed in this scenario. Like, I'm just not ready to go there yet, because you're asking for some of those teams. You've got Texas as an 8, Oklahoma as a 9. You're asking for some of those teams to not be as good as you think they are and not have good seasons. Somebody has to lose in the Southeastern Conference, right? You can't go undefeated in the conference for all 16 teams, right? And so I'm not willing to say that yet, but I'll tell you what. This Auburn bracket, if that's the one they get paired up with in any way, shape, or form, I don't want to mess with Louisville, man. I'm just telling you. Louisville basketball is going to be legit. Same way football, too. Louisville fell off the map for a while as an athletics department. I don't really know what happened there, but they've quickly turned it around, and they will be good right now. And Louisville, I'm telling you, we talked crap about the ACC last year. That conference will be better this year. Right, who else do they have in there from the ACC? You've got Louisville is in there. I saw NC State is in there as well. North Carolina and Duke are going to make up a lot of the ACC for that conference too. And so they will be a better conference, but Louisville, nah, I'm good. You can miss me with SMU is in there also as a play-in game. So I'm good. I think I'll pass on playing Louisville in the second round of the tournament. No thanks.
NC State right now with Will Wade, a 7 seed, scheduled to play Georgia and the most likely Michigan. What a game that could possibly set up to
Georgia
be.
Georgia don't want none of that.
You mentioned North Carolina, a 6 seed right now. Arkansas for the SEC is a 4 seed. In the Florida regional, you have Alabama as a 5 seed right now. In the Houston regional, Tennessee's the 3 seed in that same one with UConn. Man, what a 5 that is. Houston, UConn, Tennessee, Illinois, and Alabama. All in the Midwest.
Texas Tech is the 6 seed. Oh, Wisconsin's the 7 seed. That's brutal. Texas is the 8 seed.
And then you have Texas A&M and Miami as a play-in game still on that side of things.
Creighton's the 9 seed. Ole Miss is the 10. Dude, holy smokes. Yeah, you can leave me out of the Midwest bracket.
The South doesn't look as bad anymore.
No. And you know what? Give Auburn a break somewhere, man. I think they had a break last year for a lot of it. But anyway, Auburn has a 4 seed, SEC getting 14 in as of right now. We got a long way to go between now and college basketball season, but we'll talk a little bit about this and a lot of football when we come back, because Double D, Daryl Dapridge, joins us on the phone lines from Locked On Auburn in the Barn. Double D Wednesday is coming up next here on ESPN 106.7.
you are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And we get to the phone lines. We welcome in one of our best guests that we have on the show each and every week for 30 minutes. Can you believe it? This guy is a part of Locked On Auburn and the Barn. He is Double D, Daryl Dapperich. My man, it's good to talk to you. And even better that we get to talk about football season, which officially starts today.
Man, I saw something, I think that first of all, thanks for having me. It's great to be on. I saw something pop up on a timeline or something that was outdated that said, you know, 62 days until Auburn football. And I'm thinking, no, we're officially, what, 30 days now? 29 days?
Yeah.
Until we kick it off. So, man, the time has really flown by. And, it feels kind of weird kicking off on a Friday night, but you can start to feel it now. Here's the great part. When we wake up Saturday morning, Friday morning, which is August 1st, we will be in the month that Auburn football starts.
God.
No other way to put it, right? That says it all.
I love it. We may have asked you this before. Have you gotten over the idea of playing on Friday night for the season to kick off on a Friday?
I absolutely hate it. I hated when it used to be Thursday night games, which was a real, real big thing in the 90s. In 2000s, Friday night's even stranger to me because I'm just in that high school football mode, or have been when I used to call high school football games. You know, you can relate to that. So it's just really strange to, you know, have a Friday night game. I mean, Saturdays, college football, you know, is what it means to me. I can't get used to it. And I understand why they did it, but I'm just not a big fan of it at all.
Does it feel like you could have a little bit more pressure on you if you're Auburn now that you did get moved to Friday because you have the entire world watching you? Or do you feel like you could see a little bit more excitement from that side of things? And that means that you get your Saturday off, whether that's you want to watch college football or not, you at least have Saturday.
I think the advantages have swung to Auburn by playing Friday night. Number one, I don't care what anybody says, there will be people that will not be in attendance Friday night at that game that would have been in there Saturday because of their kids, whatever, playing high school football. Because we know how huge. It ain't like missing a piano recital in Bozeman, Montana. you are missing a foot. If your kid, I'll just put it to you this way. I have kids, okay? It could have been my daughter's volleyball game, my son's basketball game. If it was on a Friday night, I'm not going. I wouldn't have went to a college football game. I'd have been there watching my kid.
Yeah.
So there's a contingency of fans that will not be there. Number two, the pressure now is on Baylor because they are the favorite. And number three, whatever genius decided to put them in black uniforms during, you know, a heat wave, you'd think Montgomery's hot or Auburn's hot. Waco is humidity and the desert heat. It's going to be hot, and they're doing a blackout. So I just think the fact that the game is now Baylor's favored, there is going to be a contingency of fans that we're going to go Saturday that aren't going Friday.
Well,
I'm saying it won't be a sellout because the stadium's smaller, but still.
Yeah,
it could be different.
I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you on that. And we're going to dive more into the football side of things. Of course, Hugh Freeze opening up with a presser today and practice starting here in about 10 minutes or so and things like that. But did want to get your quick thoughts on basketball just for a moment here. The fact that Auburn announced earlier this week that an exhibition game is going to be played in Atlanta at State Farm Arena, and they're going to be playing Memphis. It's Tigers versus Tigers in State Farm, downtown Atlanta, to get November started. Your thoughts on Auburn playing yet another game in Atlanta and an exhibition against Memphis?
I like it. Everything in college athletics is starting to get a professional feel to me. These games that are being played that they're calling exhibitions are, to me, the equivalent of a spring training game in baseball, an NFL preseason game. That's the feel. They'll charge money. People will come see them. The only difference is in college, you won't be you don't have a roster of 125 people or 60 men with a split squad like in baseball. You will play some of your starters. That always concerns me a little bit. There's a chance. I love it for the fans. I love it for the people that, you know, will come out there and be able to watch. Maybe it'll get treated as such as an exhibition, and obviously a lot of the reserves will play more. But, you know, I mean, these kids are competitive. If the scoreboard, if they're keeping score, they're going to play hard, and you just want to come out of those, fingers crossed, injury-free.
Well, Darryl, before we dive into fall practice, you hit on it just for a little bit on Baylor now being that favorite in Waco at home on a Friday night, taking on the Auburn Tigers. What were your initial thoughts when you saw that that line had jumped 3 points? And are you still on that same boat, or has your mind kind of convinced you one way or the other?
Man, I just think that when this line came out, I was shocked that Auburn was the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started kind of becoming a believer that Auburn could have a better year than a lot of people thought, that national media was starting to maybe jump on board and that start to buy into the hype a little bit. Because when the line gets set originally, guys, you guys know that's what is kind of like the setup on how to move the money line. Like if the line is a pick 'em, then truly Vegas thinks this game is a toss up. Or
right.
When the line officially comes out, initially comes out. And then at that point, you know, it becomes a wager thing. How much money is placed on one particular team? So I was shocked that Auburn was the favorite to begin with. To me, if you asked me, this game just absolutely reeks of a pick 'em. I know who as we get closer to kickoff, I know who I will predict, and I have a score in mind. But I just think that, you know, I was shocked that Auburn was the favorite to begin with. I don't have any idea. I speculated with Charlie Five, with Kyle Rush, on why the line moved. It, you know, there was all these, you know, Baylor was picked fourth in the Big 12 preseason media day thing. I mean, you know, was it potential suspensions or removals from the team being factored in? I don't think so. I think it was just all about wagers placed, which unfortunately that's what it is, and that's how it functions. And I'm perfectly comfortable with what the line is. I think that if you're Baylor and you won 8 games last year and you have a dynamic quarterback and you're playing at home and you finish, you're predicted to be fourth in the Big 12, which is a Power 4 conference, then you should be favored slightly at home until Auburn proves otherwise.
Well, the talks that we've had, Darryl, and it came up, I think, on our show yesterday, and I'm curious on what you think about this. What if we weren't going to Waco for this game? What if this was being played in Dallas or Atlanta or Nashville or whatever, any sort of a neutral site? Or what if this game was being played in Jordan-Hare? How different would that line look? How different would the fans feel? And how different would you feel if that were the case?
If it was a neutral site game, I'd feel comparable to when Auburn played Louisville and Washington, not Oregon. Oregon scared the crap out of me in 2019, especially with a freshman quarterback in Bo Nix starting. I was shocked Auburn won that game. But, you know, the playing in Atlanta or, you know, Charlotte or whatever, if that game was a neutral site or Dallas, well, Dallas isn't even really neutral if you're that close to Waco. But still, I would feel... Yeah, that Auburn, if this game was being played on a neutral field or in Jordan-Hare, my inclination would be that Auburn should be favored, period.
Well, there you go. To be favored if that were the case. But unfortunately, Darryl, it's not. And it is in Waco, and Auburn does have to go on the road to take on the Baylor Bears in week one. We're talking with Darryl Dappert of Locked On Auburn in the Barn here on ESPN 106.7. We'll dive into that for just a moment before we take our bottom of the hour break and pick back up after the commercial. But Hugh Freeze was asked today in his opening press conference to get the season started about the preparation, about the attitude, about the health of his team, and I know that you watched it live and we were there in person. It seems like he is confident that this team will be prepared and ready to go now that practice is getting started and that they will be fired up and focused and have a game plan for that game on the first game of the year, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that the talk of expectations has now filtered down into the first day of fall practice. He didn't shy away from it at media days. He talked about it a lot, that this team was ready for the expectations, that he wasn't going to back away from the expectations. They embraced them. And you only feel that way, in my opinion, if you get that vibe from your team. For instance, when Bruce and Pearl and Stephen Pearl went out and put together the Death March non-conference schedule they did last year, I think it's because they knew what kind of team they were going to have. When Hugh Freeze talks glowingly about this team and how excited he is and the expectations are what they are and they don't shy away from him, I think it's because deep down, now you got to prove it on the field. A lot of things got to play out, but I think deep down he feels like he addressed the shortcomings that ailed them last year, that a lot of the crap that went wrong for Auburn last year is not going to, cannot 2 years in a row, law of averages say, go wrong. And he loves his roster and the money and the NIL that they put into retaining that roster. I think he's getting, I mean, he mentioned it today, guys. He said this team has a swagger. He said it. I mean, you don't say that if you're a coach unless you see it, feel it, believe it yourself. There's a lot of false bravado where teams will say this and say that. I remember Notre Dame in 2012, you know, was just saying all the right things and all this false swagger about playing Alabama when they came out of the tunnel. Remember what USC did that opening kickoff.
Oh, the crawling out of the locker room, yeah.
Yeah.
Hold them back.
All that is, that, you know, that's that false bravado. That's what I call, when I grew up in Tucson, it's all hat, no cattle. And I think Hugh Freeze sees this team as being quietly confident, and really this swag is one thing. I mean, I'm not talking about taunting, but I think he knows that they know that they are going to be better and have a talented roster. How that equates to when you kick it off and when on the field, it matters. But I do think up to this point, he's sensing something with this team that he hasn't sensed before.
Well, we'll have a chance to hear and see it over the next several weeks as fall practice begins right now, today, over on campus, as the Tigers will hit the field for the first time in the fall. We'll talk more about what practice could look like, some of those position battles as well, and what to expect in the next several weeks before Auburn does go on the road to take on Baylor in Waco, Texas. We continue that coming up next with Daryl Dapperich. He's on Locked On Auburn and the Barn. It's Double D Wednesday here during On the Line, and we talk more with Daryl after this.
Through hour number two, you've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Krista Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins, and we've got our man Daryl Dapperich, Double D, on the phone lines with us, as he is every single Wednesday at this time. And, man, it's just so much fun because now we get to talk about real football, at least tomorrow we will, since the fall practice begins today. Believe they're hitting the field right about now over there at the facility. And so, Daryl, just overall your takeaways, and I know we hinted on it a little bit, from what Freeze had to say, what he said, how he said it today in his opening press conference.
Well, I think, you know, there were some questions right out of the gate about player eligibility and suspensions and that kind of thing, and he addressed that. And then he went through the injury things, and I was a little bit concerned about the Jeremiah Cobb fractured finger injury. I know that those usually take about 6 weeks to heal. You're carrying the football. Which finger is it? But I've heard you just tape the finger, the that's next to it together, and it should be no problem. You're not talking about a knee injury or a leg injury or something like that. But obviously that's the that's what's going to happen when I'm on Zach's show this morning and he asked me to pick my fall fling for the player that's going to make the most impact in camp. And I say Jeremiah Cobb, and he's got a fractured finger. So that just goes to show, you know, that's typical. But I think, you know, talking about the team, talking about individual positions really stuck out to me that, and I loved hearing that Autry and Crawford are getting into the two deep and along the defensive line. You know, talking about the whole DJ Durkin thing, kind of scaling it back a little bit as to not destroy Jackson Arnold's confidence can be looked at a couple of different ways. I don't want you beating up your quarterback in fall practice, but again, I don't want there to be a false confidence either. I think what happened is, guys, it's a direct counter of what happened that I heard last year is that Venables, being a defensive-minded coach at Oklahoma, just killed Arnold in preseason. I mean, they just, you know, he loved his defense, and they threw everything at him. But you're playing an SEC schedule. Do you really want it dumbed down? So I don't know how I feel about that yet. I guess that's a wait and see. I don't think people should be losing their minds over it like some of them are, like some people are, overreacting. But I think this is a philosophy, and we'll just see how this philosophy plays out, you know, when they take the field August 29th. But I liked what he had to say about position groups. I liked what he had to say about kind of the overall mindset of this team and what he said specifically about Jackson Arnold. So I think there were some things that sound a little bit different than they have the last couple years. Again, what does it mean? It means nothing until we put toe to leather on August 29th.
Well, Darrell, we have to be able to let you shout yourself out a little bit. I mean, you've been very outspoken about it, and we're going to give you your flowers. But Hugh Freeze mentioned Ashton Daniels and somebody that you have been very, very high about in regards to just his playmaking ability. Again, not really having too much around him at Stanford, said that there could be very, very key situations where he takes the field as a runner or just as a skill player with the ball in his hands. I mean, how excited were you to be able to hear that not only is there a battle for that QB2 spot, but just the fact that your guy might see the field in some really key moments?
Yeah, I don't just have this love affair with Ashton Daniels for any reason that's biased. I just know that it's very difficult to go grab a quarterback that has started 2 years at a Power Four program that has some good, go back and look at some of the tape, some of the games that he's played, is very, very athletic, is very dynamic with his legs. And I'm telling you, I talked to some people that covered him out on the West Coast, said he's one of the most intelligent kids. You don't get into Stanford if you're not, that they've come across. And so I love the mentality. Here's what it reminds me of. Why I like him so much is two reasons. Number one, I think it's a luxury to have a backup quarterback like that. Three reasons. Number two, I think he's extremely intelligent. Number three, I think he's bought into the team concept. He agreed to come cross country and be a backup in the SEC because he wanted to play here. And it has shades of the whole Cody Burns thing when he agreed to move to receiver because he knew Cam Newton was the guy. I'm not saying Ashton Daniels is moving to receiver and that Auburn is as good as they were in 2010. I'm saying you need guys like that on your roster that are selfless. It's not a necessity. It's a luxury. I mean, that's the bottom line, is that you have a quarterback on your roster that has taken significant snaps at that position against Power Four opponents, who, oh, by the way, is extremely athletic and is extremely smart. So, yes, that's why I've been so high on him since he got here and felt like he was under the radar. And, you know, people come out with pitchforks. Well, Deuce Knight's going to be the backup. Deuce Knight's better. Well, I mean, he didn't leave Stanford to be third string. He left to be the backup, and I know that he's going to see the field some. And you'd rather put him in certain situations because of his experience and let Deuce Knight develop and mature. So, again, I was glad to hear it. It did not surprise me. I've been saying this for 2 or 3 months that he will see the field. Now, I don't want Auburn to go right down the field like a hot knife through butter
get to the five and they pull Jackson mm-hmm. Arnold. That drives me crazy. Go with the hot hand if there's momentum. I'm talking about, you know, you're stalling in your own end of the field and you need a quarterback sweep run, or you want to start a series. You know, you start a series at the 30 of the other team. Why not give him a shot to do something from a quarterback run standpoint or a unique package? But do not disrupt continuity. And if it's working, I don't want to see that. I don't like this pull him into the red zone crap and all that stuff.
I don't know, Darryl. I liked flashing back to the early Gus Malzahn years when he would play three quarterbacks at one time and didn't know which one he liked, so he just put him on a rotator. I think we should do that.
He put a tight end quarterback, the Cox Cat. To this day, I still don't know how he walked out. I mean, Chandler Cox, and didn't he spin around and do something in the back? I about threw something through the TV. I mean, the good Lord knew that it was best that I wasn't doing a podcast when the Cox Cat was in effect, especially the post-game presser would have been pretty interesting.
Hey, no doubt. Well, no, I'm with you, and you kind of answered my follow-up to that was, is there a world where Ashton Daniels is the backup? And so let me ask you another part to that question. Let's say for fun here, the what-if game, our favorite on the show, what if Ashton Daniels is the number two guy? Is there any concern with maybe upsetting Deuce Knight or him being not happy with his situation and him running off to a new school at some point? Do you have any concern about that?
I don't, because you're either the starter or you're not. I mean, what do you gain as far as your flowers from being the backup? I mean, maybe you get more playing time in garbage time, but I'm going to tell you right now, he's still going to get playing. If Auburn is beating somebody's brains out enough for Ashton Daniels to come in, Deuce Knight will see the field too. And pay close attention to where Ufree said, I don't want to put Deuce Knight in situations as a backup where we would run,
yep,
a quarterback run, but I would like to see him in the vertical passing game. So there's a scenario where even though Ashton Daniels may be listed at quarterback two, you know, you're at your own 10 or 15 and you want to take a deep ball shot, maybe that's the time you put him in. There's still going to be opportunities. And again, if Daniels comes in and Auburn's, you know, absolutely boat racing Ball State, then Knight will play too. I think this will be the first time in a long time in Auburn lore that you may see three quarterbacks at some point during the year playing games, not out of trying to be creative or trying to be too cute, but maybe, you know, oh, we're up enough. Let's try to get him some game time experience and that kind of thing. So, nah, I wouldn't worry about that at all. He knows Daniels is gone next year. There's the possibility that Arnold will be gone next year. He's biding his time. He's fine. I don't think that's an issue at all.
He's a contributor for Locked On Auburn and The Barn. We got Darryl Dappert with us on the phone lines here on ESPN 106.7. And we have seen it and have been waiting on it, and Freeze addressed it. So did you early in his presser, the idea of Malcolm Simmons, who it was reported yesterday. Freeze confirmed it today that he will be a part of practice. He said, and quote, okay, this is what Hugh Freeze said on the first question of the press conference.
Twice.
Based on the, yeah, okay, he got asked twice because once wasn't good enough, apparently. Based on the information that I've been given from our campus administration, who have knowledge of the matter, he has been clear to participate in team activities. And so, Darryl, I'm not going to ask you to go in on the Simmons situation itself because you know just as much as I know and just as much as everybody else knows, but I think it's now safe to say until something else happens, we are allowed and probably supposed to talk about the receiver room with Malcolm Simmons being involved in there. Do you have an early depth chart projection on what the receiver room could look like or what that rotation could be?
I would say that he's in there till he's not, because there's still a court date
sure.
that has to be decided. So, and I will, this is the only thing I will say about it, because I think it's important and it's imperative to understand and give people their props when they do really, really good work. If anybody wants to know and do a deep dive into it, and I'm not going to, and I'm not going to repeat somebody else's work, but if they wanted to do a deep dive into it, go check out Jason Caldwell's article. It's free.
Yes.
It's not behind a paywall. He does a really good job of breaking down everything as far as a timeline. And so if you're listening to the show, read it. He's very well connected with the staff. He knows what's going on behind the scenes. A lot of us do and don't put it out there. And he does a phenomenal job of putting it out there And I would just highly recommend reading it, and that'll answer any questions you may have about how Auburn got to this point. So that's that disclaimer. When people deserve their props, he deserves it, and I would direct people to that. How that affects the wide receiver room after you read that and read that timeline tells me that I would say that Auburn's preparing to have Simmons in their depth chart. Okay. He would be wide receiver number three. What does that mean? Well, I mean, I don't know if there's an opportunity for Auburn to still say, you've been clear, Title IX, blah, blah, blah. It was out of our hands, the Auburn admin. But still, from a football perspective, we feel like there needs to be some sort of punishment. I don't know that. Nobody knows. And even that wasn't speculated in the article. I'm going to operate with the assumption that he's in that rotation. I think he's wide receiver number three. And I think the only battle right now is wide receiver number four between Perry Thompson and Horatio Fields. And I really like Fields, having watched him at the A-Day game and how physical he is and how he doesn't go down after contact. And, you know, he takes a hit and keeps going. I loved what Perry Thompson did at A-Day. He was phenomenal. So I think that's your race. Okay. If you go with 10 personnel or 11 personnel and you go four wide and you empty the backfield, I think it's a great move because I think that's the strength of Auburn's team right now. And in that scenario, you know, you could have five. You could have Thompson, Fields, Simmons, Coleman, and Singleton with an empty backfield, no tight end. And I pick your poison. That's going to be very difficult to defend. Auburn will get away from throwing to the tight end much this year. That's kind of not under Hugh's DNA, but it will be this year. So I think there's going to be some things from a personnel standpoint that Auburn fans are going to be really, really excited to see. And it should be a lot of fun. It'll look different.
Before we let you go, Darryl, just quickly here, if you had to rank the three position battles that you are looking at the most for Auburn football this fall, whether it's starter, two deep, backup, whatever the case may be, the three most important position battles you got your eye on as practice is going on right now?
Running back one, who's going to be the one that just takes the field? I still think it'll be by committee, but who's going to be the one that when they start the game that goes out there first? The middle linebacker battle between Wheatland and Woodyard. I mean, the kid put on like Woodyard put on like 21 pounds. And I mean, he's, you know, and then the backup corner, is it Strader or is it Pleasant that sees the field first in packages that, you know, if Kay and Lee needs a break or Crawford needs a break, who runs out there first? Is it Strader or is it Pleasant? So those running back one, middle linebacker, and then backup corner.
Okay, there you go. Auburn fall practice is going on as we speak. Day one of fall practice, fall scrimmage, fall camp, whatever you want to call it for Auburn and Hugh Freeze in year three. He is Darryl Dapper. He contributes to Locked On Auburn and the Barn, my man. Plug it all. Tell people where they can find you. And as always, we appreciate your time every single week, my friend.
Sure, buddy. Wednesdays and Fridays, Locked On Auburn, wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube, Monday morning, 7:10 with Ben Taylor. WANI, and then I do a Sunday night live show with Kyle Rush, a.k.a. Charlie Five, and Zach, where we kind of recap Auburn Athletics on the Barn.
Man, we appreciate you. Have a great rest of your week. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday, okay?
All right, guys. Take care.
Darryl Dapper, Locked On Auburn and the Barn. He's with us every Wednesday, 3:15 to 3:45. You can catch him on Locked On Auburn and contributes to the Barn as well. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it all up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We appreciate you being with us all show long today. We also appreciate our two wonderful guests that we have on Wednesdays as we're really starting to get all of our guests back in the rotation, back in the fold here. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. was with us in hour number one, got full, pretty much a preview of what we can expect to see and hear from fall practice for Georgia, which begins tomorrow. They're going to speak to Kirby Smart in the morning, and so we'll get to get all of that info from him next week, but we appreciate him hopping on today. And then we just got off the phone with Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn in the Barn, who's with us every Wednesday from 3:15 to 3:45. He had some passionate takes and some hot takes as well. And as you mentioned, man, he's been on Ashton Daniels for quite some time, and I think his points are pretty relevant. I think they make sense. I mean, the fact that you don't go get somebody with P4 experience from the West Coast and bring him in if you don't expect him to be the backup, and if something goes wrong with Jackson Arnold, whether it's bad performance, injury, whatever, you want somebody there that you can trust and rely on to make winning plays, which he did quite a bit of on the West Coast.
Yeah, Daryl said that it's a luxury, right? It's not, it has no negative light towards it whatsoever. You felt like he was one of those hidden gems for Auburn, because it's just a fantastic piece. We talked about it as soon as National Signing Day hit, because you then, or as soon as the winter transfer portal, rather, because you then had Jackson Arnold, who was the five-star Gatorade Player of the Year, had all of the hype around him, but didn't either necessarily have the success or the talent around him at OU, which I feel like both of those situations are very true and can be true at the exact same time. You brought in Ashton Daniels, who also had more experience than Jackson Arnold did playing P4 football at Stanford, which you mentioned. So two different pieces of the puzzle. And then you bring in the five-star freshman that had not played a snap of college football. All three of those guys are at such different levels of their maturity career, their college playing career, to where you feel like it's such a beneficial factor for Hugh Freeze, for this offense, just because there's so many different pieces that you can plug in place. And like you're mentioning, if something were to go astray from what they're thinking, you have to go to plan B or a plan C. You don't sit there and feel like there is this astronomic drop off. You still feel like you can have a whole lot of success, not only because of the talent that's in that position, but because of the talent that's around you as well.
So we appreciate both of our guests hopping on today. Again, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn. And as we look ahead to what the rest of the week is going to be kind of looking like and sounding like for you, both guests are on tomorrow. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network is back on with us tomorrow at 2:30. Saw him this morning at the press conference. He confirmed it, and we appreciate him and looking forward to our partnership with the Auburn Sports Network once again this season. And so Brad Law will be back with us in the rotation on Thursdays at 2:30. We'll get his thoughts on the opening presser, fall practice, things like that. And then Chris Cordy of Locked On SEC will be with us as well. We'll get to kind of zoom out a little bit and talk about all the big storylines and position battles going on around the Southeastern Conference. 16 strong is what they're saying now. And so we get to talk about that with Chris Cordy of Locked On SEC tomorrow. And then on Friday, we get to have our Auburn football team draft. Jack Cutton, our buddy, is going to be in here with us. We get to draft all of our each individual Auburn football teams. Got to get confirmation on what, if we're going to stick with the same format as last year. You pretty much get a quarterback, a running back, a couple of receivers, I think one or two O-linemen, one or two D-linemen. You get some secondary guys and they're a linebacker and stuff too. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a draft, but we also get to break down the position groups, tell why we're picking certain players, and kind of preview this entire roster top to bottom on Friday for a free-for-all Friday. So that's tomorrow and Friday. It's going to be a lot of fun, and then we get into the weekend. So again, if you missed any of the show today, check it out, ESPNAU.com in the podcast center. We'll have it up for you shortly. And we're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.